With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to episode 63 of Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to discussing all things related to Central and Eastern Europe, and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. This podcast is a listener-supported podcast, and our patrons donate to us via our Patreon page, for which we are extremely grateful. All of our patrons receive additional benefits, so if you enjoy listening to Talk Eastern Europe and you want even more, please support us at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. Make sure to listen until the end of this episode for our traditional Patreon shout-out. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is the other co-host of our podcast, Maciek Makulski. Hi, Maciek.
Hi, Adam. Hello, listeners. Thank you for joining us. Each week, we bring you a new in-depth discussion on a certain topic related to our region. And this week, we are looking at Ukraine and the political crisis that is unfolding there. Let me remind that the podcast is a member of Europe Network, which is a network of European podcasts that covers various views on political and societal trends in Europe and beyond.
Well, as always, we have a lot of ground to cover in this episode, so let's get started.
On October 27, 2020, the Constitutional Court of Ukraine declared unconstitutional one of the articles of the Criminal Code of Ukraine, the foundation of Ukraine's anti-corruption reforms put in place since 2014, which provides the penalties for incorrect information in asset declarations and certain provisions of the law on prevention of corruption. Started the process serious constitutional crisis in Ukraine, which lasts until today, and together with Adam and with our special guest, we would like to explain a little bit the context and the current stage of this crisis in Ukraine.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the hot topics right now in the country of Ukraine. As you mentioned, it started with the October 27th decision of the Constitutional Court, basically saying that any penalties for incorrect information in asset declarations for judges is too harsh. And that was then interpreted by the government, especially by President Zelensky and his team, that that court is trying to be too independent, and that the fight against the corruption in Ukraine is taking a huge step backwards. So this is definitely a key issue, and as you mentioned, could be leading to some sort of crisis, political crisis, in the country itself.
Yeah, let me remind that the fighting corruption. The serious fighting corruption was one of this thing which started after the Revolution of Dignity, and of course this process is still ongoing, but it seemed so far as one of the biggest achievement of these changes, political changes in Ukraine, that controlling corruption started in this country. So as you said, this might be seen as a serious problem in that way, that it stopped somehow these positive changes in Ukraine. And I would like to mention one more thing, which to me seems to be important, because in the beginning of this whole situation, Zelensky and his administration wanted rather to use kind of a force means to tackle this crisis, this mm-hmm. situation. Yeah, so the idea was to prepare a bill which would, if passed, it would replace all judges in the Constitutional Court. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, but it is perceived that in Ukraine this constitutional court is rather a body which follows the general direction of the head of the state, so the president, right? Maybe not the direction, but there is some certain level of cooperation between these two bodies. So Zelensky probably counted that they can introduce such harsh means to solve this crisis, but it didn't finally happen because the draft bill was withdrawn. And I think it was withdrawn because simply they were afraid that it won't pass and that would be a prestigious defeat for the president.
Right. And I think it has a lot to do also with the fact that there's still a lot of issues in regarding rule of law in Ukraine. And this crisis, I think, highlights exactly how that issue remains unsolved. Not just the corruption issue, which is as we started talking about in the opening, is being kind of stripped back a little bit by this decision, but also the fact that the Constitutional Court made a decision which Zelensky's administration didn't agree with. So their response was to just try to dismiss all the judges, which was completely against constitutional rule, and instead, I think in the end they managed to suspend the head of the Constitutional Court, who was actually appointed to that court by Viktor Yanukovych before even the Revolution of Dignity, and so you have these kind of clashes of interest, clashes of ideas, and the fact that the rule of law issue is definitely exposed in this crisis as well.
Yeah, so this is a broad context of all these situations. As you can see, it started in October last year, and it follows and it continues. So at the current stage, we don't know exactly how it might end. But Adam, to get some details about that and maybe possible solutions, you had a very interesting conversation, so maybe you can introduce first our expert and say a few words about the interview itself.
Sure. So I tried to help our listeners and help us get a better understanding of the situation there, as it is a bit complex, especially from a legal standpoint. I interviewed Irina Shiba, who is the executive director of a foundation called De Jure. It's an NGO which acts, it's based in Kiev, and it acts as kind of a watchdog on judicial issues, justice reform, and also political corruption. So she had a lot to say about the situation. She gives a lot of very interesting insights as to how the whole situation unfolded and who benefits from either, from which direction the crisis is going. So there are a lot of different elements that we look at and that we talk about, including on top of all of this, other crises and other issues that are taking place in Ukraine, including of course, the COVID-19 pandemic and the management of that there. So I met with Irina and we had a very interesting discussion, which I think our listeners will also find quite interesting.
Okay, I think it's already quite an introduction, so I feel we can start listening to the interview.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mm-hmm.
And joining us now is Irina Shiba, who is the executive director of the De Jure Foundation, an NGO which aims to promote the rule of law and reforms in the sphere of justice in Ukraine. She's an expert on judicial reform, restorative justice, and juvenile justice. Welcome, Irina, to the Talk Eastern Europe podcast.
Good morning.
So I would like to start by asking you to help our listeners understand the consequences and the importance of the decision by Ukraine's Constitutional Court last October. Basically, could you walk us through the court's decision and explain the most important elements of it and why it was so controversial?
Of course. The decision that Constitutional Court of Ukraine adopted in October is so scandalous because it undermines the system of electronic declaration, of system of asset declaring of officials. This is one of the biggest achievements of the Revolution of Dignity, because the system and all the other anti-corruption infrastructure that was created around the system allowed us to see how much money officials are earning, how much money are they spending, do those spendings correspond their income. And this was also the ground for so many investigations by journalists and investigative bodies that help us to realize what is the scale of corruption in Ukraine. However, this decision particularly, it's actually destroyed the anti-corruption infrastructure and also shed the light on the integrity of the Constitutional Court of Ukraine judges, because the decision that they were making it in the conflict of interest situation, and it was benefiting them themselves because some of them were investigated by the National Anti-Corruption Prevention Agency.
And so basically, it's the declarations that officials and including judges, right, that they had to make as being public servants, that's been declared unconstitutional, and they no longer have to do that, if I understand correctly.
Not clearly. So actually some of the provisions that they canceled, they said that those declarations, for example, for judges, they shouldn't be monitored by National Agency for Prevention of Corruption, because this is somehow interferes the independency of judiciary.
Okay.
So they were saying that no one can monitor the judges, because otherwise they will be pressured to do any decisions. And this is ridiculous, because this is draft law was analyzed by so many international partners and checked by experts, and there was no pressure in this, because this was actually a way of controlling their income, not the way the decisions that they are making. So it's the same with some of experts were joking. So you could stand on the feet of a judge accidentally in a bus or somewhere in the street, and the Constitutional Court might say that there's also the pressure on this judge in making some decision. But the idea of this law was that that an APC had the right to investigate the electronic declarations, to make those checks and to find out if there are some violations in terms of submitting them, when they submit this information, and what kind of information that they submit. And few of the judges were investigated, and they might have received some reprimands in the nearest future. However, because of the decision of the Constitutional Court, there will be all of the officials, including judges of the Constitutional Court, who were investigated because of the information in the electronic declarations, they will not be punished.
And part of the main controversy about it, as I understand it, has to do with the head of the Constitutional Court, Alexander Tupitsky. Can you talk a little bit more why he himself was under investigation? I believe it had to do with some land declarations that he didn't include in his declaration form.
Yeah, so what we shortly found out after the decision, that some officials, but also journalists, found out that the head of the court had some land in Crimea, and he bought it under the Russian legislation. So this is would be first of all unethical, because of the judge of the highest court buying the land in the Ukrainian territory that is under control of the Russia, but also he didn't declare it, so he didn't indicate it in his electronic declaration, so he lied in it, and it is a violation of anti-corruption legislation, or it used to be, because this particular norm was also found unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. So in this way, they had also helped himself to avoid punishment in this case.
And we know that President Zelensky has been pretty strong against the ruling, and even proposed dismissing all of the judges of the Constitutional Court. At the end of last year, he signed an order which actually suspended Tupitsky for 2 months First of all, I guess my question is, does the president have such powers to suspend a judge on the Constitutional Court? And what was the reaction by, you know, societies or media politicians and other judges of Zelensky's moves and decisions?
So answering the first question, if the president had such a power, the short answer would be no. Because there is the specific procedure for dismissing or suspending or firing the judge of the Constitutional Court, and they are indicated in the Constitution. The president does not have a power to suspend the Constitutional Court. There are some contradictions and some different opinions on that issue, because there are some norms of the Criminal Procedural Code of Ukraine that allow to suspend an official by the president. But to our opinion, he doesn't have such authority regarding the Constitutional Court judge. However, this decision was a bit controversial and received in a different way, because from one side, there are many people in civil society, in the government, in the parliament, who want Constitutional Court judges to go away, because this decisions that we just discussed, it actually showed their integrity is lacking. They lack in their high integrity standards, but also they are deeply politicized and politically dependent from officials. So there are all of these discussions around the constitutional crisis were not only around the how we solve this and how we restore the anti-corruption institution, but also how we get rid of the unworthy judges who are sitting there in the Constitutional Court right now. So suspending Topitsky was an easy way to do that, but it was but there are a lot of doubts on the legality of this decision. It would be more efficient, or more, I would say, more legal to do it, is to start official investigation and based on this investigation, dismiss him. But also the judges of the Constitutional Court could suspend and dismiss the judge based on the disciplinary violations that he committed. And via de jure, we'd actually address the Constitutional Court judges and ask them to do so. However, they never reacted to our letter.
And you mentioned that the Constitutional Court is politically dependent in some ways, and this decision kind of shows that. Can you talk a little bit more about the makeup of the Constitutional Court? Because as I understand, some of the judges who are there, including Topitsky, have actually been appointed even during the Yanukovych period. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. The problem is that there are three bodies that appoint judges of the Constitutional Court in Ukraine. This is the president, the parliament, and the assembly of judges. And those procedures of appointing the judges were politicized for many years. So obviously they were done without any clear competition, or were not based on merit, but they were more based on political connections and your political influence. So for you to be as a person, as a lawyer, to be nominated as a Constitutional Court judge, you need to have really good connections, or in the office of the president, or in the parliament. So you need to know a member of the parliament who will nominate you, and only then you can be considered and appointed. So as you see this from the beginning of the process, you need to have political connections. And yes, we still have judges who are there and who were appointed by Yanukovych, although they were voting in the past years for so many politically motivated decisions that were highly doubted by the civil society and criticized by many lawyers. So the idea that we've been proposing and we've been talking about for the last few months after this constitutional crisis kicked in, that this should be changed. The procedure should be depoliticized, that we need to create an independent commission that would run a clear, open competition that would check judges and candidates on their integrity and their proficiency, and only those that the best of the best will be appointed by the president, the parliament, and the assembly of judges.
Before we move on, I just want to briefly ask, how many judges are there right now on the Constitutional Court?
So according to the law, there are 18 seats in the Constitutional Court. However, some of them are empty now. We have three vacancies, and that two of them should be filled in by the parliament, and one should be filled in by the assembly of judges. And actually, on the third of February, we just had the hearing in the parliament where they were considering the candidate, and actually the committee recommended few candidates Two of them are members of the Sluha Narodu Party, and others also are representatives of the pro-Russian party. So the parliament once again wants to appoint judges without clear competition. And so they don't check their integrity, they don't check their proficiency. The only stage of the competition, or so-called competition, in the parliament is the interview with the candidates, where just answer simple questions why they want to become a constitutional court judge.
And talking about Zelensky's and his clashes with the constitutional court, do you think this has helped his popularity, or maybe it's hurt it? How generally has the society seen this crisis that's unfolding?
It's hard to say about Zelensky popularity in general, if we're talking about population in general, because we don't have like such a clear social pulse. The issue is there's so much going on in Ukraine besides the constitutional court. And there are so many bad decisions that Zelensky and his administration or his office attempted. Regarding investigation of the team, of his team, but also investigation in some other cases. So the Constitutional Court is just one of many, many decisions, one of many, many problems that President Zelensky had to solve, but failed to do so. Because the suspension of Topitsky is not solving the politicization of the Constitutional Court and the fear that this court can still adopt some decisions that can undermine successful reform even more. So Zelensky had more than 3 months already to solve the Constitutional Court and to decide on what to do with the Constitutional Court judges. This time was more than enough to submit the draft law and to adopt it in the parliament with the support of his party, to set clear rules for open competitions to the Constitutional Court and to select clearly independent and proficient judges. Contrary to what he did, he just suspended the head of the court. It, for me, it looks more like making appearance that he's doing something rather than really doing something to solve the crisis. And also his committee, the committee of the parliament that includes many members of Sluha Narodu, also supported some other candidates from Sluha Narodu to become the future judges of the Constitutional Court. It seems like they want to control the court for themselves, to include their own representatives in the Constitutional Court and to change the balance of power, so to have more influence on its decisions. Now it seems like they don't. However, it will not help the independency of the Constitutional Court in general.
Let's talk about civil society, because you work for a foundation which is specifically involved in legal issues and especially justice reform in particular. So how is civil society reacting to the situation? How can it put pressure on politicians and judges and also build awareness in society? And what are some specific activities that your foundation has been doing?
So right away after the decision, our organization with many other partners, we organized a public action in front of the Constitutional Court to show our reaction and our concern regarding the Constitutional Court decision. We also called upon judges to resign voluntarily, and we also called upon politicians to solve the problem in a constitutional way, because some of the decisions that were proposed in the beginning, they were clearly unconstitutional and could even deepen the constitutional crisis and undermine the rule of law in Ukraine. So we developed a few solutions and a few possible ways that the parliament and the president could use in this manner. And we've been advocating them, meeting with politicians, but also talking about this on TV, talking about this today. So one of the solutions that I've already mentioned would be the new clear competition to the Constitutional Court, but also some efficient investigation should be done to look into those violations of the Constitutional Court judges and dismissing them from their position.
And do you think that this issue is quite, you mentioned that you're going on TV to talk about this. Is it covered a lot in the media in Ukraine?
I would say yes. Like in the beginning, in October, in November, it was the topic number one, and everybody was talking about it. And we had a lot of actually leaders of opinion and politicians joining us on this problem and mentioning that it needs to be solved. But it's how it quite often works in Ukraine, that politicians show that they are concerned or deeply concerned that something needs to be done, but then again they make an appearance that they solving the problem while they really don't, and then another crisis kicks in, another informational problem, or like another information or another news just fills in all the media channels and everybody forgot. But the situation with the Constitutional Court, I don't think it's something that would just easily would be so easily forgotten, because we all understand what kind of powers the Constitutional Court have, and it's now considering some other important laws, some other important applications, like application on the constitutionality of the high anti-corruption court.
Yeah, it's definitely important to follow that as well. I wanted to ask, what do you think is the implications for Ukraine's international standing? Obviously, this is a serious step backwards in terms of reform process and rule of law. Even, I think, as we talked earlier about Zelensky suspending Tupitsky, which is probably not legal at all, and the fact that Zelensky's party is trying to put their own people into the Constitutional Court. Have you been hearing, or any international partners, what is the reaction from international organizations and other Western, let's say European partners?
So actually, the Venice Commission already mentioned it in their opinion that they believe that the Constitutional Court of Ukraine is a serious threat to the independence of Ukraine, and the reform is needed. And the judges should be selected by international experts and the public. And this was this opinion, but also other partners also been supporting this idea, at least in our informal communication. But besides the Constitutional Court reform, there are so many promises and obligations that Zelensky and his team didn't deliver on, like reform of the High Council of Justice and reform of the District Administrative Court of Kyiv. So these were demands of the IMF, but also of European Union, and they were prerequisites to receiving financial aid. And those promises were not performed, were not delivered.
And one thing that just comes to mind is that you mentioned earlier that Zelensky has a lot of crises to deal with, and he's not delivering on many of them. Would you say that could be an opportunity to try to at least, you know, to actually create a crisis between the president and the Constitutional Court to help cover some of the fact that, let's say, the COVID pandemic wasn't managed very well in Ukraine? I don't know if this is something that people are talking about, but I'd be really interested in your opinion on how this crisis fits into kind of the wider situation of politics in Ukraine.
I don't think that there was the creating the constitutional crisis was the way of covering up for COVID, because the COVID is still one of the biggest topics and it still affects the people's life. And contrary to what they are doing with COVID, I think they are reducing the statistics, because the cases are not monitored well. I myself, who have been diagnosed with COVID back in October, I don't think that I would go to the private clinic, and I'm not sure what was my case indicated in the statistic or not, because the testing level is really low. The problem is with this, what are the spendings from the COVID fund are made. So they mostly invested in the police support or roads rather than in actually testing or medicine or supporting hospitals. But in terms of going back to constitutional crisis, I think that the president was himself a bit surprised on this decision, because my feeling is that they wanted, or they believed, that they can control judiciary like many other presidents did in the past. So they would find a way to negotiate or to agree on some terms of cooperation, some quid pro quo, with what they can propose to the constitutional court judges or other to support their agenda. However, it didn't happen. And what we see now from the tapes of the District Administrative Court of Kyiv, there were some tapes recorded by the NABU, National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, that there is this judiciary mafia in Ukraine that provides services to politicians, but not necessarily those who are those who have majority in the parliament or those who are sitting in the office of the president, but rather those who are paying more money or having better personal connections with the judges of the District Administrative Court of Kyiv or High Council of Justice or Constitutional Court of Ukraine.
So what do you think is next in this drama? Do you think it's going to keep building up into a crisis, or will there be some sort of solution that will be managed to help resolve this situation?
So my feeling, again, I can't be 100% sure on any of this because we never know what is there behind the curtains. But the president and his administration understood that they can't control the Constitutional Court. The last decision, like the decision from October, it favors the Russian Federation and pro-Russian politicians, not Slugha Naroda Party. So the idea that seems like they are implementing right now to take control over the Constitutional Court through appointing additional judges who will be representatives of their party. So they are pushing for this appointment without international experts or public society. So they already found two candidates that are suited, that are already gathering documents for appointment. And they would try to put as many of the people that they have to the Constitutional Court to make sure that they vote in a way that Slugha Narodu or Zelensky administration prefers.
So basically the long-term game, kind of. Yeah, just try to wait out and get their judges in to slowly replace.
Because in the beginning, what they tried, they attempted actually to dismiss all judges at once.
Right.
And this was their first proposal. But this was highly criticized by civil society and some other political leaders. Because this would, as I said, undermine the rule of law, but also it would create the risk that Slugha Narodu would control all constitutional courts, because then they would have to appoint so many judges with the parliament and from the office of the president at once. So with the majority in the parliament, they could actually appoint 2/3 of their compositions of the constitutional court. So in this way, they would get quite full control over the constitutional court's decision.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, we will definitely be watching that issue. There's one last thing that I wanted to ask, because this was something that just broke earlier this week, and that was the decision about ordering sanctions against Taras Kozak and shutting down his media, which includes 3 television channels, and are often considered to be promoting a pro-Russian or pro-Kremlin narrative. So I'm just curious, what is your take on this decision, and how much, because there's been some criticism from the West, even though it's understandable. And how much support do you think Ukrainians give to this decision? I'm curious on your opinion.
I think the civil society part is greatly supporting this decision, because it's good for national security. And what you mentioned before is true. These media channels, they were largely promoting Russian propaganda and Russian ideas and Russian vision of the political situation. And they were destabilizing political situation in Ukraine, but also providing the fake news to the citizens. But the official reason why the sanctions were imposed against the Taras Kozak was not the TV channels or what they were transmitted, but more the schemes for coal supply that he was using on the occupied territories that contribute to the financing of the terrorism. So this was the legal way to block in these channels, but also other assets of Taras Kozak and punish him in that way. But in general, I believe that blocking this channel is important for the national security, and many media experts, Ukrainian media experts, actually supported this decision and said that these media for many times actually violated Ukrainian media law.
Yeah, it's very difficult in the age of fake news and disinformation, you know, to also to try to avoid being called a censor. But, you know, when we even see with Twitter and Donald Trump, so I think we can make kind of a parallel a little bit there when their pro-Kremlin narrative is being pushed onto, you know, Ukrainian society, and Ukrainians are de facto at war with Russia in some sense. So I agree with you that there is probably a reason from national security point of view. So, Irina, thank you again so much for joining us. There's a lot of issues that we covered, and there are a lot of issues to continue to cover in Ukraine. So I hope that we can stay in touch for the future.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for inviting me for your great podcast.
Thanks.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And that was my interview with Irina Shiba, the executive director of the De Jure Foundation based in Kiev, Ukraine. I hope you found it interesting. I think this is definitely one of the main topics that we are going to be watching politically in Ukraine over the next several months. As we mentioned, it is a key issue that is unfolding in the country and could lead possibly to some sort of constitutional crisis or other political crisis. So we are definitely going to be watching that. For me, Maciek, I think it was interesting to hear how she had proposed they have ideas on how to overcome it, which includes basically appointing judges based on expert panels and input from civil society and experts, but none of the political sides in the country really think that's a good idea and in fact want to continue this politicization of the constitutional court in Ukraine. And in fact, Zelensky probably will end up, you know, there are some already openings. And as we mentioned in the beginning, the idea was to first just dismiss all the judges, which did not work, but maybe try to slowly replace them one by one through maybe a longer process. And that's probably the direction it's going to go if it maintains the current situation.
Yeah, that's what I've learned from your interview with Irina. That's exactly the tactic, let's call it like that, mm-hmm. for now, that they will try to do it step by step, try to replace the judges in the constitutional court. Maybe not all of them, but probably they will try to achieve such amount of judges who are in favor to the current presidential administration that it will be enough to simply tackle this serious problem, which of course is good from that point of view. It might help to end this political, not only political, but it's simply political crisis, let's call it like that. But on the other hand, it's not the best thing when we look at the rule of law in general in Ukraine.
Yeah, it definitely allows Zelensky to consolidate power more in the country, and you know, with more influence on the judiciary and the legal system. And one thing I think that didn't get resolved in this whole crisis is actually the corruption reform, which was considered unconstitutional, that basically launched this crisis. The National Agency for the Prevention of Corruption has basically lost any of its power, and we don't know really. That was it's unclear if that's any of that is going to ever come back, or we will see actually greater corruption in especially in the judiciary. So I think this is also something that we need to be watching,
exactly.
not only the legal side but also the corruption side.
The thing is also that, you know, now everyone will be focused on this level of the crisis itself, yeah? Or how to deal with the constitutional court itself,
yeah,
and what people will finally be installed there if it really happens. And, you know, the core issue, fighting corruption, will be taken off from the agenda, yeah? Maybe not completely, but it won't be the central point of this political struggle. Yep. And I think this is a huge loss for Ukrainian political and social life.
Yeah, I agree. I think too, we'll see what kind of pressure might be coming from Western partners. But as you said, this crisis basically gets to mask over the corruption side, the missing piece, which has been left behind. Okay, so definitely a very interesting topic, something that we are going to continue to keep our eye on throughout this year and beyond. Maciek, I think maybe now would be a good time just to move briefly to our final section of the podcast, which is the traditional announcements.
Yeah.
Do you have any announcements you want to start with, Maciek?
First of all, I would like to start from saying thank you to all our patrons and supporters. Some time ago, you announced our new goal in reaching, I think, 30 mm-hmm. patrons in total by the end of February, or I don't know.
The end of winter, I think, was the...
The end of winter, which is not concrete enough, which is good, I think. Good thing. So hopefully we will choose the moment to announce success. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a more Chinese way of announcing successes. So yeah, big thank you from me to all our supporters and fans. Thank you for all feedback we get from you. We will try to be as active in producing new episodes as we were so far. And we will also try to come up with some new ideas for our growing community on Facebook, which is also a good moment to remind that this podcast has its own closed Facebook group. It's closed, but we basically accept everyone who is interested in joining us. And so far, it's the best channel to get in touch with us. This is also a source of knowledge about new episodes or upcoming episodes and our guest speakers. So if you are a new listener for Talk Eastern Europe, please visit us on Facebook.
And I just also want to add my thanks to all the patrons who do provide us with the financial resources to support the podcast, to help us with the production of the podcast. And we have a lot of great ideas also for involving the patrons. Last year, we did a special Zoom, closed off-the-record Zoom meeting with Viktor Martinovich, a Belarusian writer. And we are in the planning stages right now of organizing another Zoom meeting for our patrons. So this is an exclusive benefit that is in addition to the podcast, and that is a discussion with an investigative journalist based in Hungary. We're going to talk about the situation there, so please stay tuned. And of course, there's always the main benefit, which all of our patrons receive, and that is the shout-out on the podcast, which I always have the pleasure of doing. And I just want to say thank you and hello to all of our patrons: Joseph, Pat, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Amy, Naomi, Sylvia, JP, Elise, Nina, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavo, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Scapeghost, Wilhelm, David, Elizabeth, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. We are at 29 patrons right now, and as Maciek mentioned, our goal is to have 30 by the end of the winter. There's a lot of snow on the ground right here in Poland, so we have a little bit of time, but it would be great if you're listening out there and you enjoy the podcast. You can support us by going to our Patreon page.
Okay, Adam, so now my question to you, do we have any other announcements?
I have one last announcement, Maciek, and that is the fact that New Eastern Europe just released its latest issue of New Eastern Europe, and it's a very interesting one. This is our January-March issue, looking at the situation of the state of democracy in Central and Eastern Europe. We have a lot of very interesting analyses, discussions, debates, and we have the challenge of distributing this issue as we have been experiencing in the last year over the pandemic period because of lockdowns and all that. So we have a goal to sell 130 copies of that issue. Each issue is only 10 euros each, and I will have a link in the notes, but you can just go visit neweasterneurope.eu for more information on our latest issue and to find out more what's inside.
What I can add here is that subscribers of New Eastern Europe have also access to digital archive of all issues of New Eastern Europe.
Yes.
And this is something what I find very useful very often in my work. So I think it's also a good reason to become a subscriber of New Eastern Europe.
Definitely, definitely. We are celebrating 10 years this year, so we will be doing a lot of also celebrations and anniversaries and commemorations. There's a lot of content to go through. So if you're a subscriber to New Eastern Europe, you have access to our full digital archive. As Maciek said, it's over 10 years, or nearly 10 years of content out there. A lot of very interesting stuff. So I do recommend, if you want to read more about the region, check us out as well.
So Adam, it's also almost 10 years for you of being the editor-in-chief of
yes.
New Eastern Europe.
Yes, the time flies. It really goes fast. Hard to believe, really.
Okay, thank you, listeners, for your attention. I hope someone is still here listening to us. I am also looking forward for this all celebrations regarding this special anniversary for New Eastern Europe. Talk Eastern Europe is quite a young project.
Still,
this,
yep.
Yeah. but it's important, I would say, within this family of New Eastern Europe. So also here, I think we will refer to this anniversary at least a few times during this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe we'll manage to do some even special live events or online discussions, talk Eastern Europe, New Eastern Europe. There's a, you know, we are all one part of the same family. So, okay, I think that's it for the episode. Maciek, thanks again to you, and thank you all to the listeners for being with us. And until next time.
Thank you. Enjoy the winter and take care.
Bye.